His wife had brown eyes and hair, so most assumed I got my features from her. She leaned back in the simple chair and sighed. When did he tell you? My ears gave it away. I was 10 years old and started puberty, which could have been what triggered the changes. I was afraid that an evil spirit possessed me. I had always been stronger and smarter than the boys my age. I used to beat the shit out of Runeer all the time. She chuckled lightly, and I couldn't help but join her. I never believed it was odd until my ears got longer. He had to tell me. For a while I thought the truth was much worse than anything I imagined. The books we owned said that the ancients had features that seemed to match mine. We guessed I must have been a mix of some sort. She smiled slightly at me. But I came here to talk about your memories and to get you to stay in the camp. Earlier you said that the Obarni wasn't the name of your leader. She leaned toward me in her chair. No. So you weren't a general in this army that defeated the ancient elvens? Her brow knitted in a mixture of disappointment and confusion. I was the leader of the Obarni. We were over 280,000 strong when it came time for the final battle against our enslavers. We had so many troops that I couldn't field them all on the field of war. I would boast that it was probably the most powerful army to ever be created, but I don't know my history that well. Each soldier was changed by the elements, like you are now. I hand-groomed 5 generals to manage the training, logistics, and strategy. They were 5 of my best friends. It took me 32 years to build the army with them, and we endured hardship and struggles that I don't want to remember anymore. During the last battle, I would estimate that at least 100,000 of my warriors died. Her eyes grew wide as I spoke. The elvens had struck an agreement with a family of dragons. We narrowly managed to beat them, but it was nearly the end of everything. I lived through the fire, but my hand, I lifted my left hand to show her the deep scar marks, bore some wounds. She stared at me for a few moments, and I tried to figure out what she must have been thinking. Finally, she spoke. What else? Huh? If what you are saying is true, Kyair, she scooted to the edge of her chair and grasped my scarred hand in both of hers. Her touch felt electrifying. Then I am not understanding why your place wouldn't be here with me. If you created this powerful army to defeat the elvens once, you can do it again. You can drive them from our home, out of this world, and back to whatever hell they came from. Yet you think you should be going to save my father, Jesme, Graken, and the Queen. There must be more to the story. She grinned and turned her head sideways a bit. It reminded me of Shlara again, and I needed to close my eyes and pull my hand away from her. During my imprisonment in the castle, Islata was my main source of contact. It frustrated her that I said my name was Kyair, and she refused to call me by that name. Apparently that word is cursed by the elven people. I am known as the Destroyer to them, and they never say my real name. I am more of a legend, since this battle happened so long ago that the elvens don't really care to remember the conflict. Islata thought it was around 5,000 years ago. That can't be possible, Nadia said defensively. I am having problems believing that you spent even 32 years building an army. You look like you are hardly 20 winters old. She smirked playfully, and somehow our hands found each other's again. Her fingers entwined with mine, so I couldn't pull away easily. They were warm and smooth. I thought the same thing as well, but she also said that the humans called me the Betrayer. From what I have recalled, I believe what she told me. Why would they call you the Betrayer? Didn't you free them from slavery? From what you are telling me, you should be our greatest hero, and remembered and revered for those 5,000 years. She shook her head. I did wake up from imprisonment, remember? Of course, but it couldn't be because you destroyed the Elvens. Maybe you were imprisoned by the Elvens? There was a letter etched into the dais. It was from one of my generals named Malik. I started to feel nervous about telling Nadia of what I had done. It was so long ago, but I still felt the fresh shame and heartache. She looked at me with such adoration. I did not want to change the way she felt about me. I did not want her to look at me the way Shlara had. I recall that as well. Back when we first brought you to the castle, you couldn't remember what happened. I remember now. I betrayed my people. I committed a horrible crime that my friends could never forgive. I tried to escape, but they eventually found me. They may have taken pity on me, or maybe they found it too difficult to kill me. Either way, I was sent to your world as a prison sentence. What did you do? Her eyes filled with empathy, and she squeezed my hand. I murdered one of my generals, I said, and she winced slightly. He must have deserved it. Kyair, you are a good person. You are a hero. You have done everything within your power to help our kingdom. You saved us from the Van Lorn soldiers. You prevented assassins from taking Jesme at the inn, and then you chased down the Elvens who kidnapped her and saved her life. During the banquet, you defeated those four Elvens who made demands of the king. You have done nothing but help us. You must have had a good reason. She smiled at me reassuringly, and her hand squeezed mine again. Thank you, I returned her smile. What you said helps me. I took a deep breath and closed my eyes before continuing. I wondered for a second how I would feel talking to someone else about Shlara's death. Shlara was my best general and friend. When I remember her, I can't help but think of you. My voice cracked a little, and I felt a lump form in my throat. I swallowed and choked it down to my stomach. Me? Nadia puzzled. She looked like you. Beautiful, athletic, brown hair, and eyes that flashed dangerously when I made her mad, which was often. But her personality reminds me of you as well. She was driven. She knew what she wanted and worked tirelessly to achieve her goals. Shlara never made excuses or failed. She was a logistical and tactical genius. She made changes to my army that improved our performance dramatically. The woman was the best warrior in our army. No one could beat her during a sparring match. All of my generals were amazing warriors and tacticians who had my respect, but she was a cut above the rest. She was the type of woman that only comes into existence once in a dozen lifetimes. Nadia's face was a mixture of confused emotions. I saw her cheeks flush slightly and heard her heart beat quickly. She loved me. I felt warmth on my cheeks and realized I was crying. I loved her too. Silence fell between us. I closed my eyes and tried not to remember her death. Instead, I remembered everything I had ever thought was amazing about her. This was probably more painful. The silence stretched into minutes until Nadia spoke. "Why did you kill her?" she whispered. I looked away from her and down at our entwined fingers. "I was horrible to Shlara. She told me what she felt for me almost daily. She wanted to be my lover and to bear my children. I refused her. I told her I didn't want to give her special treatment. I told her I didn't want to focus on anything other than our war. I gave her dozens of different excuses. She was persistent, though, and kept pushing me until I finally agreed to give her what she desired once the war was won. Sometimes I think about her, and I wonder if she only wanted to destroy the Elvens because she thought this would earn my love. I paused, and then let my fingers slip through Nadia's before continuing. Her face was shocked and still confused. "Why didn't you want to be with her? From how you describe her, she was amazing," Nadia asked hesitantly. Let me go back to earlier, I said with a small smile, and she nodded in agreement. We were slaves to the Elvens. That much I told you. My life wasn't as difficult as others. My father was a trained blacksmith, and he instructed my brother and me in the trade. We could have been out in the fields, or servicing our masters in their homes directly. Either option was less appealing because we would have more interaction with them. More interaction meant it was more likely I would be killed or beaten. I looked to her face, and she nodded in understanding. The Elvens lived in groups of extended families. They would own pieces of land where they would farm and raise cattle. They would also trade goods and services with nearby families. I'm not sure exactly how their leadership was implemented. At least, I don't have a clear memory of it now. I think a group of elders led the family. The head elder wasn't quite a king. Pog gave me definitions for various leaders in your language. I think the closest one that fits is chieftain. Nadia nodded again. Darkness had fallen completely now, and it would have been impossible for us to see each other if we were mere humans. My father and brother were skilled and worked directly with the chieftain's closest family. There were only a dozen or so horses in the stable, but it kept me busy for most of the day. I chuckled suddenly with a realization. Maybe we did have the most perilous job of all the humans. I don't recall ever seeing the chieftain, or even the elders, but their children used the stables often. Nadia returned my smile and leaned forward. The chieftain's eldest daughter was the most dangerous. I didn't know much about her, but the other slaves would warn me not to cross her. There were tales about her endless cruelty. She apparently murdered humans daily for pleasure. She even killed her own kind for displeasing her. Rumor said that her father couldn't even control her, and she was the true ruler of their tribe. She was powerful and vicious, and everyone feared her. I didn't know how many of the stories were true, but there are normally some grains of truth in those tales. She would come to the stable? Nadia asked with concern. I nodded. She seemed to enjoy riding, and would visit 3 or 4 times a week. She would bring an entourage of trainers, or the children of the other elders with her. I was always afraid of them, but she seemed to wear terror around her shoulders like a cloak. Even the other elvens who accompanied her seemed to fear her. Once, a spirited horse threw her off her saddle. She promptly ripped its legs off and then left it to die on the track outside the stables. I had never really seen an elven do anything violent. I was afraid of them because humans are supposed to fear them. But when I saw her do that, I felt real terror. She sounds insane. What a horrible life. I'm sorry, Kyair. Nadia reached out to me again and clasped our hands together. When she came into the stables, I tried to avoid her notice. I thought that if I did a really excellent job keeping the stables clean, and if I always had her horse ready for her, she wouldn't want to murder me. It was a ridiculous belief. Horses were worth much more than humans, and she only rode the nicest in our stable. If she could kill a horse with so little thought, with such brutality, I knew that she would do the same to me if I ever upset her. But it was the only hope I had, the only power. If I was perfect, if I pleased her, it was at least possible that I could escape her wrath. Nadia shook her head and looked at me in understanding. I did catch her notice, though. She began to come into the stables more, almost every day. Sometimes she would visit twice. She started to stare at me when I prepared her horse, or when I did my chores around her friends. Normally, the elvens would only speak to me when they needed their horse, but they would never pay attention to me. One day, she dismissed her riding coaches, and we were alone in the stables. I tried to concentrate on my work and avoid looking at her, but she watched me for what felt like an eternity. I expected to die that day, but instead of killing me, she asked me what my name was. I smiled sadly at Nadia. Then what happened? I told her. A few days later, we became lovers. I had never been with a woman. She showed me what I needed to do to please her. I never understood what her motivation was, but I often wondered why she took a human as a lover. She was beautiful, and from what information I gathered, she had many suitors from different elven families vying for her. "You are quite handsome, Kyair," Nadia breathed. "It is hard to resist your charms. If anyone could seduce a ruler's daughter, it would be you." I think part of me foresaw that she would kill me one day. There was no other way for it to end. There was no way we could be together. Did you speak about any of this with her? Did she tell you she would protect you or keep you safe? Nadia asked. No. I was too afraid to hear what her answer would be. I also feared that it would push us faster toward whatever end she had in store for me. So you were trapped. You must have been terrified. Don't feel too sorry for me, Nadia. I smiled at her. She was beautiful, even for an elven. I had never experienced sex, so I enjoyed myself. This sounds twisted, fucking crazy. But I came to love her. I wanted to be with her, and even though I knew our relationship would eventually kill me, I didn't care. I just wanted to share myself with her. Was it just carnal, then? Did you and this woman have a relationship beyond just sex? Nadia stood up and let go of my fingers. Then she walked over to the head of my cot and sat next to me on the bed. The right side of her body touched mine, and she took my scarred hand in her own. No. I wish I could say it was, but we had conversations as well. I think we went horseback riding a few times, or at least she promised that she would take me, since humans were not allowed to ride horses. I have not remembered everything yet. She would mostly ask about my life and responsibilities around the stable. I know I tried to find out more about her, but she was always elusive. I looked from our entwined fingers to Nadia's face. We sat close enough for me to feel her warm breath on my cheeks. I loved her for the wrong reasons, but I still loved her. "More than Shlara?" Nadia asked with concern. "In some ways, yes." Nadia didn't look happy with the answer, but I continued. I don't know for sure how long we were lovers, but the affair ended suddenly. One day I needed my brother's help with a new horse. He assisted with the shoeing and broke a tool. My father was working in the smithy next to the stable, so I walked over to get a new tool. When I came out of the stable, I saw a large group of elvens coming down the hillside to the stable. The chieftain's daughter was at the head of the group. I ducked back into the smithy and hid with my father. The elven men ran into the stable and exited with my brother. She started to strangle him, and my father ran out with his hammer to save his son. "Fuck," Nadia said in disbelief. Her suitors butchered him as she finished choking my brother. I ran to their sides. I was going to pick up the hammer and try to kill her, but I really just wanted to die with them. My brother and father were all the family I had. "Why didn't they kill you?" There was a rumor of her being with a stable boy. She came to the stables that day to prove it false. When they found my brother there, they assumed he was the stable boy in question, and she killed him to show how little she cared. That the idea disgusted her because she, like all of them, had so little regard for humans. We were animals to them. When they asked her what to do with me, she told them to take me to their human army for training. I remember the way she looked at me, like I meant nothing to her. She regarded me with as much concern as the horse she had brutalized. I hated her then. I hated her for murdering my family and for pretending to love me when she did not. "Fucking bitch," Nadia spat and then stood. She paced around the tent for a few steps, but there was not much room to walk. How could she do that to you? I want to scream. You have so much reason to hate them, especially her. I do hate them. You know how I feel about them. She nodded and then sat down on the chair across from me. I think she may have saved my life. At least, she explained to me later that she had little choice and she regretted her decisions. I remembered the conversation Iola Rothy and I had on the battlefield before our last struggle. You spoke to her again? Yes. I wanted revenge. Her people had been experimenting with humans as warriors, as a way to fight for more territory without risking their own lives. Elvens are so much stronger and quicker than humans. It did not work. But her tribe had been changing us with the elements. It was a messy process. Most did not survive. But my anger gave me strength, and I lived through the change. Did she visit you during this change? Nadia's voice was angry. No, I didn't see her for a long time, until the day of our last battle. Her face looked shocked, but I didn't want to change the pace of my recollection, so I continued speaking. They eventually had around 50 of us in their small army. They began to train us in the art of warfare and combat. It was a mistake. Eventually, I led a group of us in revolt. We killed the trainers and escaped into a nearby river with canoes we crafted. They tried to come after us, but we eluded them multiple times. I paused again and wished I had some water. Then you created the army? Nadia nodded while she asked. Yes, I had a mentor. I can tell you about him another time. We learned how to harness our powers beyond our bodies, how to fight, and we freed other humans. Eventually, we grew in size, won victories, and made dents in the elven population. I don't think they took us seriously until it was too late, and we had already gained too much power. Toward the end of our struggle, the elvens finally seemed to get organized. They started using larger-scale tactics. They did break-offs, feints, used territory, and they managed to win a few of the smaller battles that Shlara and I did not plan. In the end, though, we had their entire army outpositioned, and it came down to one final battle. "And you saw her again," Nadia said in amazement. I thought she might have died somewhere along the way. I almost always thought about her. Most of the time I hated her for what she did. I wanted to kill her and all of her kind as vengeance for my family. I can understand vengeance. Nadia's voice trailed off, and I thought about Nanos. The general of their army asked to meet with me under a flag of truce. It was her. Nadia finished my sentence in shock. Yes, I smiled. It had been 36 years. She asked for me to surrender. It was a foolish request, because one of our soldiers could kill multiples of hers, and she was completely outnumbered. She tried to explain about the death of my brother and father. She told me that she did love me. I didn't want to believe her words. What did you do? Nadia leaned forward again in her chair with rapt attention. I went back to my generals, and we began the attack. I thought that her request was odd. It burned in my mind, but I didn't voice my fears with my generals. She had something planned with the dragons? I had never seen a dragon, only heard tales of them. Somehow the elvens had 3 on their side. I closed my eyes and saw their glassy bodies and the heat of the molten flame. I remembered Riccato Lusti Catri screaming at me. They killed my warriors like ants. They were the most fearsome creatures I could have ever imagined. We managed to kill 2 of them after taking heavy losses. I almost got the last one, but she escaped and flung me through the air to what I thought would be my death. You didn't die, though. Nadia squeezed my hand again, and I looked into her beautiful face. I suddenly wanted to pull her to me and kiss her. I needed to drown out these memories with her body and the sounds of pleasuring her. No. She found me lying in a field. We spoke again, and the hate I had for her vanished. Then we made love, while our two races killed each other 20 miles away. Afterward, she asked me to flee with her into the wilderness. I would leave everyone behind, Shlara, my people, my role as their leader, and the world they expected me to create for them out of the ashes. I looked into Nadia's eyes for a few moments before I answered the question I knew she would ask. I said yes. Nadia jerked her hand away. I closed my eyes. So you left with her? She killed your brother and father. What were you thinking? Her voice was angry, and some of the footsteps outside my tent stopped for a moment. Shlara found us. I didn't know how to explain it to her, nor would she have listened had I tried. She attacked. I used my magic and killed her. She attacked you? No. She went after Io Larothi. I tried to stop them from fighting when it became apparent that Shlara was going to be victorious and kill. I put my face in my hands and couldn't hold in a sob. It just happened. It came from me. She screamed when the fire tore apart her body. I hear it over and over in my head. The memory triggered the scent of fire and death. The tent fell silent. Your generals captured you afterward? Nadia finally said. I think they did, eventually. My memories are more scattered after that. I searched for her. We were separated somehow. One memory is important, though, and it is one of the reasons I want to go to your father. I remember following her to a shrine. In this memory, I learned it was called the Radical. An old elven man told me that she was here with a young girl who looked like me. A child? Nadia's voice was a mixture of astonishment and pain. I glanced at her, and she quickly recovered. Was it yours? I don't have any memories of her. But I believe so. I didn't know that humans and elvens could reproduce, yet you are here, so it must be possible. Yes, I suppose, Nadia's voice trailed off into silence. The elven told me that the girl was sent through the Radical to another world, but the power source, the ovule, as he called it, needed to be replaced. So she went to find it. Did you find her? I don't have that many more memories after that. If the child was my daughter, and if what Islata said is true, it has been over 5,000 years. She is probably long dead. I will never get to meet her. I'm sorry, Kair. Nadia sighed and leaned back away from me in the chair. She looked around the tent and spotted the single reading candle on the side of the oaken chest. She stepped over and quickly lit it with a match before continuing. I don't know how I feel about what you told me, but I do understand what it is like to be without a father or a mother. She smiled at me, and I let out a slight sigh of relief. Exactly. That is why I want to bring your father back to you, and why I want to make sure Jesme is safe. You are my family now. I couldn't save my father and brother. I made a mistake and killed Shlara. Perhaps in my past I atoned for it in some way, but I can't remember that. I want to atone for it now. I would love to stay here with you, but I am not going to make the selfish choice again. Our eyes met for a few moments, and she sighed. It is hard to argue with that, she finally admitted. So you agree? I will leave tomorrow. I got up and moved back to my pack to attach the quiver to one of the loose straps. Kair, what feelings do you have for me? She said after a few seconds of me fiddling with the quiver. I looked up at her face. She stared at me intently. What do you mean? Before we separated, and I was in your room, you had convinced me to join you in the bathtub. Her voice cracked slightly. I remember. I wish the elvens attempted their kidnapping a night later. I was eager to make love to you. Her breath caught slightly, and I heard her heart beat faster. Now that you remember more about Shlara and this elven woman, What was her name? Io Larothi. Io Larothi, she repeated. I could see her roll the name around on her tongue, as if she was trying to decide if she liked the taste of a new wine. Have your feelings for me changed since then? She stared into my eyes, and the small light from the candle made them look like fire. Feelings? I said, puzzled. Don't be daft. I want honesty. Don't play games with me. She sighed and shook her head quickly. Do you still desire me? She asked. Of course, I smiled and saw her body relax slightly. You've just heard about my past and the horrible crimes I committed. Do you still desire me? She licked her lips and gave the response I already knew she would. She wouldn't have asked me what my feelings were for her if she didn't already have them for me. Yes. Her eyes drifted down from my face to my lips and then back to my eyes. But I don't know where that leaves us. I have more questions. She followed up quickly with the first one. When I say desire, I mean... She looked around as she stumbled over her next word selection. Attracted. I nodded and let her continue. But we've spoken before about what I need from our relationship. It seemed that you wanted to fuck anything that would spread its legs for you. I don't want to be just another horse in your stable. I explained how my beliefs on fidelity are different than yours. Yes, I remember, but I want to be clear to you. Her eyes flash dangerously. In your room that night, you had not agreed to my terms. Part of me wishes that the alarm had not sounded until much later. The thinking part of me realized that I gave up on my principles for you. I was once with a man who had multiple wives. I am not going down that road again. If you want to be with me, you will have only me. I opened my mouth to reply, but she stopped me. My beliefs on fidelity are different than yours, she smirked. You don't have to agree to anything right now. I nodded and let her continue. Before you choose, consider the life I have planned, whether this is the life you want. After the war has settled, after we defeat these elvens and drive them from our land, I will return to my father's keep in the east. I will continue to help him manage the land and its people. I want nothing more than to help my country. My days will be filled with diplomatic negotiations, with strategy meetings. I want to spend my nights with you and my father discussing philosophy, history, sciences, the day's events. She waited for me to reply, and I nodded while I considered what she said. The only other. She paused and licked her lips. Her heart had started beating quickly during the last part of her conversation, but suddenly she seemed nervous. I want children. I love children. But I am sterile. I don't know if this news of your daughter makes you want to try again, but I cannot bear your children. If I could, I would, Kyair. Her eyes shone with water. But I can't. It is because I am a half-breed. She spat the final words. I nodded a few times and tried to figure out what to say. Then I realized I would need time to think about her words. I had never thought about what my life would be like after I defeated the elvens who had invaded this world, just like I had never thought about what I would do in the past after I destroyed them. I want to be with you. I want to learn more about you, but more than that, I want this life I have planned. You need not commit to anything at the moment, but we will not become lovers until you do. I need to think more about what you just told me. I know I'll have more questions tomorrow. That is why I would like you to stay. It may sound selfish, but I need you here. The kingdom needs you here. If the elvens have found Meriem, then there is nothing you can do now to protect them. We will figure out how to negotiate for their release. I am still leaving tomorrow, though, I said with a smile. By the spirits, you are so fucking stubborn, Nadia sighed with exasperation. I don't want to lose you again. I need more time with you. I'll return to you, Nadia. My words stopped what she had been about to say. What we have talked about makes sense to me. I showed you all the ugliness in my life, and you didn't run away in fear. I want to consider my future as well, and if there is a place for me here after this war. She nodded and smiled. I am hard to kill. This Empress's small army can't stop me. I once obliterated her entire race. She cannot prevent me from finding your family and bringing them back to you. Your confidence is infectious, she mumbled. Nadia stood up from her chair and was suddenly in my arms. Her lithe body felt wonderful against mine, and my hands absently rubbed down her back. We embraced for a minute or more, until she slowly pulled back away from me. Our faces passed each other, and her eyes hinted at how much she wanted to kiss me. But she didn't. Maybe by the time you return you will have more memories of your daughter. I want to hear about her, Nadia said wistfully. I hope I do, but I suspect that I never met her. I think Iola Rothi sent her away through the Radical, and then couldn't follow her. Nadia suddenly stopped, mid-reply, and her eyes opened wide. Her hand shot out quicker than I had thought possible, and grabbed onto my shoulder. Kair, do you think... She looked into my eyes, her question unspoken. No, I said with a smile. It could be possible. I don't know how this magic works. If you lived for 5,000 years, I may have also come through with a delay. She shook her head, and her body trembled. No, the old elven made it clear. The girl was much older than a newborn baby. She was already talking. She argued with Iola Rothi. She also had green eyes like mine. Nadia nodded and sighed in deep relief. Also, while you are also beautiful, you look nothing like her. You couldn't be her offspring. Good. The thought just jumped into my head. I will consider what you have told me. I should return to my tent now. She licked her lips slightly and gave me a gaze that told me I could keep her here longer if I tried. I'll rest for the night. I'll be back before you realize I am gone, with your family in tow. I look forward to seeing them and you again. Be safe for me, please. She lifted her hand to my cheek and moved her face forward to kiss me lightly on the other one. Once she had touched it with her kiss, she dragged her mouth over mine and our lips briefly touched. You are teasing me, I said. Can't help myself. Maybe you'll agree to stay? She grinned, and her body pressed against mine. My hands came up and wrapped around her lower back. Are you going to abandon your principles so soon? I smiled at her. Our mouths were close again, and I could almost taste her tongue. No. Damn you. She sighed and pushed away from me. My friend gathered her cloak, and I helped her wrap it over her shoulders. She took a step toward the tent flap, and she suddenly stopped and spun to face me. You said she doesn't look like me? She demanded intensely, with a startled gasp. Her heart drummed like a racing horse. Iola Rothi? Yes, Nadia's eyes looked different somehow. They darted from side to side and didn't seem to focus on anything. What did she look like? Tell me now. Nadia practically screamed at me. I was so surprised that I took a step back and almost fell onto my cot. Are you feeling all right? I don't know, Kair. Tell me, what did she look like? Please. Her voice sounded so urgent. The hairs on the nape of my neck stood up in alarm. Something was wrong. A deafening thunderclap boomed. It was so loud and close, I could have sworn that it took place right in the center of the gorge outside of my tent. The air smelled of burning wood, and the darkness was pulled away and replaced by a light so intense that it seemed to be day. I knew what caused the noise and the light. The camp alarm sounded half a second later. Nadia and I flew out of my tent, and I had to grab her cloak to keep her from sprinting off the edge of the cliff. Countless soldiers screamed in alarm. They dashed out of their tents, clothes half on, weapons drawn. The top of the gorge was about 200 feet above my tent. On the side of the overhang, in neatly formed rows, elven archers stood, bows drawn. Other elvens held torches, the brands casting intense light that exposed our camp to them. There must have been 500 of the fucking bastards in total. I cursed under my breath. This was about to get messy. "O'Barney!" a voice screamed from above. It repeated half a dozen more times before it became obvious that the elvens weren't letting loose with their arrows. I finally located the owner of the voice on top of the ridge. She stood in a group of a dozen heavily armored elven warriors. Her golden hair reflected torch and magic light like braided water. Our eyes made contact from the hundreds of yards of distance between us, and she smiled, the mischievous grin I had grown so used to seeing on her face. Islata had found our camp.
Chapter 6. Jesme. Clean yourself. A woman of your blood should not be seen in such a state. Her voice was harsh, mocking, and had a nasal quality to it that the people of Tamata found attractive and fashionable. My stomach sank and tears came to my eyes again. I shouldn't have expected a different reply from my mother.
"Your daughter was almost raped, Ortrilla,"
Gricken said with concern that betrayed his massive size. "But it has been some time since then, and she has made no effort to present an appropriate appearance. It is unacceptable." Her eyes shone blue and cold like the northern ocean. My mother was beautiful, with hair a lighter shade of blonde than mine, and skin the smooth texture and color of summer peaches. Her lip upturned in annoyance at Graykin's words, and I guess she was about to chastise the old bear for questioning her treatment of me.
"I am tired of hearing your voice, Ortrilla. Do not speak again until I address you. If these ancients come here, and you so much as breathe loudly, I swear on the spirit of my brother, father, and mother that I will fucking gut you before they kill me."
Nadia's father stood by the window, and his voice was more sinister than I had ever heard. He had a small corner of the curtains lifted, and peered into the afternoon light to view the ancients. He was so focused on the window that he did not even look at my mother when he said the words.
"You cannot threaten me in such a manner, Beltor," she screeched in outrage.
Rayot's family clung together at the far corner of the table. I could not tell who they feared more, the four of us in their home or the force of the ancients in their village.
"They are coming, shh,"
my uncle ordered. I heard the stress and fear in his voice, and I felt my body grow cold. The wood of Rayot's family table was slick under my hands from my sweating palms.
"Do not speak to them. I will do the talking. Do not make us regret the decision we have made."
Graykin's voice was a low rumble of rolling hate. I felt it vibrate the surface of the table and the bones in my chest. Rayot, Greta, Tira, and Juri had taken me in, fed me, and provided for me the last few months. Now that they knew who I was, they stared at us in awe and disbelief, especially Juri.
"Please don't kill my son," Rayot said for the 10th time.
"Silence, peasant. I have not decided on his punishment."
My uncle spat from the side of his mouth. He moved toward the door as a knock echoed throughout the home. I felt some pity for Juri now, seeing him cowed and injured, no longer the looming threat he had been. A stab of pain for my injured foot reminded me perhaps I was being too generous with my mercy. I cradled my belly with one arm and silently prayed to my grandmother that our baby was unharmed. Beltor and Graykin had concealed their weapons under the family's table. My mother, Graykin, and I sat at the table nearest the door. When Beltor opened the door, I could see the two armed ancients on the porch. During the banquet, when my father knighted Kair, the ancients who attacked him had worn golden armor that looked like insect plates. The elvens who kidnapped me wore finely crafted leather padding dyed black and gray.
Both of these ancients wore protection similar to Graykin's trusty mail shirt. But their armor was composed of tiny links of chain. Each piece was engraved with leaves, flowers, and trees. There was something odd about the metal. It seemed almost the color of the green frosting that ships often carried on their copper pieces. Through my fear, I wondered if the blood of all the people they had killed caused their mail to rust.
"Is this your farmstead?" one of the ancients asked. They were both men and had long braided hair and slightly different shades of slate gray.
"Yes."
Beltor's voice didn't tremble.
"How many head of cattle do you own?"
As if by some unspoken cue, the ancient stepped forward, and while they didn't push Beltor back physically, he was forced to retreat from the doorway or risk colliding with the armored men.
"Do you want some of our livestock?"
Beltor asked. He moved his body away from the entrance and tried to block their view of the family room.
"Yes,"
they said in unison. Their faces were almost identical, or at least I couldn't make out any difference between them, besides their hair color.
"We have 130.
The lie came quickly to Beltor's mouth. I knew we had almost 200.
"Which fields are yours? We will require half,"
the ancient with the darker hair said. Suddenly his eyes made contact with mine. They were the color of a dull ruby, and I couldn't help but shiver. I tried to look away. I felt like they knew everything about me. Knew why I was here and knew who I was. I knew about Kair.
"It will be 5 crowns ahead."
Upon hearing Beltor's price, the ancient's red eyes released their hold on me. I held back a sob in my throat and tried not to whine. My hands clutched the table, and I realized my nails were digging into the hardwood. The elven stared at Beltor for what felt like an eternity. Their faces betrayed no emotion. I couldn't tell if they were shocked at his demand.
5 crowns is more than our budget allocation,
finally, the one who had stared at me said. I felt the tension in the room ease.
"We have the best cattle in this village, nay, in Naya and Gradar. I'll show them to you right now, if you wish. Which field? We will inspect them ourselves."
The lighter-haired one frowned. The other one turned his attention back to me. Beltor noticed his gaze. I wish I had listened to my mother and put on better clothes. Graykin's cloak covered my tattered dress, but it seemed like the red-eyed ancient's gaze penetrated the garment.
"Northeast, I am proud of them and would enjoy showing them to you. Let me saddle a horse, and I'll lead you there."
Beltor's voice was urgent.
"Who is she?"
The elven raised his hand to point. I gasped, and my heart stopped beating.
"That is my daughter, my wife, and servants," Beltor answered. "You are scaring them. I'd like to take you away so they can relax." "Why are they not working?"
the other ancient said.
"I called them in when I saw your army. I thought you would butcher us. That is what the stories say, at least."
My uncle laughed nervously.
"Don't be foolish, human. You need not fear."
The lighter-haired man smiled.
"Any time an army comes in, we have to be afraid. I'm sure you can understand that. But it looks like I might have to fear your haggling prowess. Come, let me show you my herd. I want my 5 crowns, and I'm sure you want this over with so you can continue on your way."
Beltor gave a short laugh and gestured toward the door. The elvens nodded in unison with his last statement.
"You are correct, human. We must continue on our journey."
The darker-haired ancient that had pointed at me reached down to his right hip. There was a leather pouch there the size of my spread hand.
"This is much more than your asking price. How many horses do you own?"
My man back here handles the horses. How many can we spare?"
Medea's father turned around and looked at Rayad with an angry stare that the ancients didn't see.
We have 6,
Rayad stuttered. I doubt I could have spoken if Beltor had asked me a question.
"Excellent. We will take 2 of them,"
the ancient said.
Fine, let me show them to you."
My uncle gestured to the doorway, and the ancients nodded. Then the 3 were gone.
"Thank the fucking spirits,"
Graykin whispered after a handful of seconds passed. "Do not use such language in front of me," my mother said with an angry look at the old bear.
"Sorry, my queen."
The big man bowed lower than his big frame should have allowed. I knew the old bear well enough to believe his words were sarcastic.
Beltor is a fool. He should have explained our situation and surrendered. The Empress has already promised our family asylum. My mother tossed her hair with an annoyed flip of her left hand. I cannot stand to spend any more time in this hovel. I wish to return to the castle with my daughter.
Go back, then. It's a short walk.
Graykin's beard concealed his mouth, but I could tell from his voice that he was close to either screaming at my mother or breaking this house down on top of us. I do not appreciate your attempted wit, you ridiculous broken drunkard. If you had not failed in your duty of protecting my daughter, none of this would have happened. I blame you for the fall of our kingdom. Bless the spirits that my son was able to salvage your relationship with the Empress. Her insult caused Graykin's face to turn a shade of red I had never seen. That isn't true, Mother. The words escaped my mouth in a whisper, and I hardly realized I had spoken. What isn't true, daughter? Her voice mocked mine. That this old man failed, or that your brother saved our kingdom, or perhaps something else in your little bird brain is finally working and you think you can explain the situation better to me. Maybe you'll actually be able to offer a solution instead of just letting yourself be taken advantage of. I shook under her ice-cold stare and her upturned lip. I tried to speak, but I didn't know what to say, and the lump in my throat seemed to be preventing me from even breathing. My foot throbbed. My vision got blurry, and I blinked to keep the tears at bay. Are you crying now, my poor, useless daughter? She sighed and covered her face with her delicate hands. I should really blame myself for how you turned out, but I just cannot. Your father and his lack of discipline had far more to do with it than I did. At least you are beautiful, or you will be again when you have recovered from whatever you did to yourself in the forest. I tried to speak, but the words were lost to me. Instead, I felt removed from my body. When the sobs hit me again, I couldn't fight them. I was not in control anymore. I didn't think I had any tears left. I should have expected and prepared myself for her scorn. She was right. I was always at someone else's mercy. Graykin needed to protect me, then Kair, now Nadia's father. Maybe it would have been better if I had been taken to the Empress and tortured. Maybe I should have just died when they tried to kidnap me. Graykin's cloak was warm and heavy, but I still felt cold and couldn't stop shaking. His face was almost the color of wine, but his blue eyes stared at me with empathy. Had this been any other day in our previous life, the old warrior would have wrapped his giant arms around me so I could cry into his chest. He would have told me how amazing I was, how beautiful I was, and how my mother was wrong. Eventually he would calm me down and do something to make me laugh. Then he would turn me over to my handmaidens, and they would clean the tears from my face before sharing the kingdom's gossip. Everything was broken now. Even though my guardian sat in front of me, he couldn't risk angering my mother. He was sworn to do her bidding. What would Nadia do if my mother had just spoken to her that way? The thought gave me mixed emotions. Nadia was smarter, braver, and more beautiful than me. Even my mother could not find fault in my cousin. Or maybe she just knew that Nadia would not tolerate such insults. The door opened so suddenly the draft blew back my hair. Everyone jumped to their feet in surprise.
Fuck! Horses!
Beltor's eyes were wide and panicked.
What horses?
Graykin asked in confusion.
There were three Naya horses in the stables.
Nadia's father slammed the door quickly behind him and ran over to the window to peer out again.
We left them in the forest, though,
Graykin said with puzzlement. Those were the horses that the ancients stole from the castle stables when they took me. Kair left them here as payment to Rayav for housing us, I said slowly.
Fuck. Oh, fuck. Fuck!
Graykin suddenly looked as panicked as Nadia's father did. Then I understood the mistake.
They didn't notice, but it changes nothing. Just buys us a few hours, maybe. Someone will see the brandings and the saddles. They were stock from the royal stable. The ancients will wonder how those horses got here and then piece the situation together.
Beltor sighed and then let the curtain fall down in place.
I thought we had escape detection. We should go back to our horses in the forest and leave,
Graykin said with a nod, approving his own idea.
Where will we go? We have 20,000 troops in the north, but the snow hasn't thawed yet, and we couldn't make the journey. We can't go east to my keep. The Loshers will have troops there.
Beltor sighed with frustration. Could we go south to Brilla? I asked. The sound of my voice surprised me. My mother looked over at me disapprovingly.
We would have to go through Naya. We would probably get caught.
What if we sailed there? I asked. We might trade the horses for a small boat and get to Brilla that way. My voice lost its volume when Beltor and Graykin didn't nod in approval. The cloak seemed to press down on me, forcing my shoulders to slump. The wool fabric felt itchy and horrible.
No one knows how to sail, Jesme.
My uncle shook his head with a displeased expression. I would not risk myself on a boat. I have no desire to travel anywhere but my home, my mother said with her chin held high in the air. Beltor moved quickly across the room, and I heard the sound of the slap before I saw him hit my mother. He struck her with the backside of his hand.
I told you not to speak until I addressed you.
She stared at him in a beautiful mix of amazement, shock, horror, and contempt. Rayot clung to his daughter and pulled his son closer to him. How dare you hit me, Beltor? I am your queen! She looked over to Graykin and pointed at Nadia's father. Are you going to let him touch me?
Aye.
The old bear smiled big through his beard and chuckled a little. You have failed my family again. Beltor's hand flew out and smacked my mother across the face in the same spot. It seemed like this was a much harder blow, and my mother's head snapped to the side.
Do not speak unless I address you,
Beltor repeated with slow enunciation.
I know it is difficult for you to comprehend the situation, but I am in charge here, not you. I don't serve you. I serve our kingdom and the rightful heir to my brother's throne.
I guessed it, then. My mother sneered and blood dripped out of the corner of her lip. You want the kingdom for yourself. You were always jealous of him in our marriage. Will you force yourself on me like you will rape Naya? She let out a mocking laugh.
No, Otrilla, you are the ugliest woman I have ever met, and the idea of laying with you makes my mouth taste of vomit. I never envied my brother. I was allowed to marry the woman that I loved to make a beautiful child with her. He was forced to spend his life joined to you. I never wanted to be king. I only wanted to raise my family in peace.
My mother's eyes grew large at his words, and she frowned. I had never seen my mother cry, but it seemed the Beltor statement hit a nerve with the mean woman.
I serve our kingdom. My brother is dead. Your son is a traitor for having made an alliance with our enemy. There is only one rightful ruler of our land.
He nodded at me and smiled. The grin made my heart ache to see my father again. My uncle's hair was a few shades darker than my father's, but they shared the same smile.
I'll agree with that.
Graykin looked at me and grunted. Me? I gasped, and my mother snorted.
Yes, Jesme. Our armies will follow you. Our people will follow you. We'll just need to secure you somewhere safe for a few months, until our main force can return from the north. The Elvens and Loshers cannot stand against our army. We outnumber them too greatly.
But they hold the castle. How will we fight them? It was the only idea I could grasp as the significance of his words swirled around in my head.
Let us worry about that. You'll have generals, advisors, Graykin, and me to guide you. It is your birthright, and we need you to claim it.
He nodded and smiled reassuringly at me. My mother drew in a sharp intake of breath, and Beltor shot her an angry look that cut her voice off like a muted harp string.
First, we will get Queen Jesme to safety.
Graykin got up and stretched his massive shoulders.
Girl,
Graykin pointed at Tira. The poor girl's face turned white at his attention.
When Jesme is crowned, she will ask you to come to the castle and visit with her. There will be banquets, dancers, musicians, and a circus. Would that interest you?
Tira's eyes grew wide, and she nodded eagerly, all fear forgotten with the thought of circuses.
Excellent. But she needs your help to get clothes together for her trip. Can you take her to your room and find clothes?
Tira was about 6 winters younger than me, and the tattered dress I wore was probably the only garment in the home that would fit me.
"I have clothes she can take," Greta said. It was the first she had spoken since Graykin and Beltor dragged